in one of these and in one of these. One of these lasts longer than all the rest.
Two rights, the extraordinary energizer.
In one of these. One of these lasts longer than all the rest.
Two rights, the extraordinary energizer.
It'll surprise ya.
Laboratory tests prove in most devices, Energizer lasts longer than any other battery. New Energizer.
Oi!
You what to do, don't you fucker? Oh, he's on. All right, oi there, producer Mike. Oi, we are. I think I'm this chap named Tony Wolf, and we are the Action Room.
Oi, oi, oi,
oi, oi, oi, oi, oi, oi, oi.
Now the reason we're doing this punk rock opening,
ooh, that was exhausting.
Brought to you by punk rock was because
brought to you by in capital letters punk rock
and punk lives as far as I'm concerned. So
punk lives right here in the Action Room.
I was a huge punk fan. I don't know if you got into any punk bands really that much at all, but
a tiny bit
in high school that was like all I listened to. And so I was like, when I heard that Gary Panter, who is basically the punk rock artist of the kind of L.A. scene in the 70s and 80s. He was also the guy that designed all of Pee-wee's Playhouse and everything. He's an awesome kind of abstracty, really grungy looking style artist.
So we heard that Gary Panter was going to be in town.
Yeah, when I heard that he was going to be at MoCA, which is the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art, I was like, we got to get him on the show.
And I was like, I've never heard of him, but okay, I trust producer Mike.
So we went there, and we got an interview, and that's going to be after the break. Right.
But we didn't talk to him in a ridiculous British accent.
No.
We didn't pretend like we were punk rock people.
No, he's actually very subdued.
He's such a nice guy, and very mellow, and very friendly, and very low-key. So anyway, we are Geek Radio. We are the Action Room. We have new radio shows for you twice a week. Twice a week, ladies and gentlemen, every Monday and Friday morning. Oi, oi, oi! And I'm Tony Wolf. We have
producer Mike.
And there's no one else here, actually.
Yeah, no.
Today.
And okay, and I have a safety pin in my cheek.
And I have a ripped up shirt with the anarchy symbol. Also, you can declare anarchy on Twitter. We are at the Action Room on Twitter, and you can declare anarchy on Facebook, on our Facebook motherfucking fan page, yo.
And I have a mohawk, but you can't see it because I'm wearing a hat.
Yes.
Okay,
producer
so...
Producer Mike has a mighty mohawk.
all right, so the thing I wanted to talk about because... Oh, no, first before
there's
we do
There's a
lot
that, of stuff this episode.
There's a lot of stuff this episode, but... And
we got a great show for you tonight, people.
We're going to talk a little bit about the Expendables, Scott Pilgrim, what went, you know, what did better at the box office, and also the deleted scene in Star Wars.
Ugh.
Was it real or was it Memorex? And the other thing, but that's later in the show, but the first thing, we want to give a shout-out to the Action Chick.
Yes.
Who did a segment where
Katrina
she,
Hill is her name. She goes by Cat Hill. She has a site, The Action Chick, and she's at Action Chick on Twitter.
Well, actually, and the site is actionflickchick.com.
Actionflickchick.com.
Yeah, and so it's called, this segment she did, this little video was called Action Chick TV, The Missing Expendables. And she basically wanted people, all that she knows, other geeks and stuff, to talk about who wasn't included in The Expendables, what action heroes
right.
and stuff. And so Tony, me, and Zoe did a segment, and she interspliced it, and it's funny. So that's
you just summed it up. So check it out. You can see it. She says it's the debut of Action Chick TV. Maybe it's a new segment of her videos.
We're very excited.
We're very excited. So thank you, Action Chick. I also want to give one shout-out to a guy who listens to our show all the time. He was converted from the Amber Benson video. I don't even know his name. I think his name is Robert, but on Twitter, he is at... Professor's Mind.
Cool.
Professor's, no apostrophe S, because you can't do apostrophes on Twitter. But Professor's Mind, you are a cool guy, and we like you.
Now, I wanted to also give a shout-out to the guy who called me brilliant when I talked about what I'm about to talk about again on two shows ago. Now, who was this guy's name?
Anthony, I believe his last name is pronounced Piccione,
okay.
Or Piccone. He is a guy who I met through Sal Cipriano, a letterer for DC Comics. Anthony Piccone, or Piccione, or Piccione.
And
he's a great artist in his own right. He's a terrific
And he's brilliant for calling me brilliant. So now this
he called you brilliant on our Facebook page.
Right. Not in person.
No, he's never met producer Mike.
No, but basically I was talking about, you know, with the net neutrality issue and, like, the fact that I think that the end of net neutrality is a good thing because it starts to create more revenue in terms of art again. And
it puts some gateway on the whole experience.
Now, here's the thing, and I thought this was really interesting because of the recent quote, the thing that Mellencamp, John, he's not Cougar anymore.
He's John just Mellencamp, John Mellencamp.
That
we wish he was still a Cougar, though.
But before I get to his quote, because, well, maybe I should say his quote first. His quote was basically saying, and this is from, where is it? This is from Wednesday, he said this.
Yeah.
He said, I think the internet...
And it's now been all over the world, this article.
And as you might be like, who is this guy? He has huge hits from the 80s, but it doesn't really matter. The fact is, he knows more about the music industry than we will ever know. So
he's almost a Bruce Springsteen-level star.
Right. What was the...
Small town. I was born in a small town. Yeah. What else?
Anyway.
He had that Wild Nights cover with someone years ago. Anyway.
Okay. And I always got him confused with that other guy with the big hair. What was that guy's
Rick
name?
Springfield.
No. Anyway.
John Fogerty.
Doesn't matter. We've already lost most of the audience. Okay. But his quote was, I think the internet is the most dangerous thing invented since the atomic bomb.
Whoa.
It's destroyed the music business. It's going to destroy the movie business. Now, he sounds like me.
He sounds eerily like producer Mike.
I've been saying this kind of shit for years. Everybody looks at me like I'm crazy. And now he's saying it. And people like this, more and more people are saying this. And I wanted to go back to a few other quotes that people have said. That first of all, I want to go back to 2000. 2000 was I was at a .com. This is when the whole .com was getting big and everything. And Lars Ulrich, you know, had come out. Who's the guy from the drummer from Metallica? And Metallica was really, opposed to Napster, the file sharing that had just started at that time.
They were the first band to really speak out against it.
Yeah, and they were like, and maybe their interests were a little different because everything was new back then, so they just didn't want people taking their shit.
Right.
But ultimately, what's going on is like people are seeing that it has nothing really to do that specifically with the artists themselves, but that it'll affect all artists if file sharing continues. So anyway, that was 10 years ago. And so just recently, in 2010, January, Bono was talking about, his quote was, a decade's worth of music file sharing is swiping. Wait, what is it?
A decade's worth of music file sharing and swiping has made clear
that the people it hurts are the creators. In this case, the young, fledgling songwriters who can't live off ticket and t-shirt sales like the least sympathetic among us. So the fact is, yes, it hurts the big people to a certain extent, but it really hurts the people that have
the medium and the small people.
And so then he said, yeah, and this is the thing that I was saying with net neutrality. And this was his manager who said this.
Paul McGinnis.
Now, he said that...
Bono's manager.
Yeah, he saved the harshest rebuke for bandwidth providers who, he says, bear the huge responsibility to put things right. Bono also ripped into ISPs for not doing more to help copyright, to help protect copyright. And that's the whole thing. So now with this net neutrality, this deal with Google and who was the deal with? Google?
Verizon.
And Verizon.
It's still all rumored, though. I mean, we don't really know.
But the fact that they start to block BitTorrenting and certain sites and make people not able to do this kind of stuff, you have to do it or else everything's done, the way Mellencamp said. And the other few quotes was from June 9th of earlier this year, when Radiohead's Tom York, the lead singer, said,
it will only be a matter of time, months rather than years, before the music business establishment completely folds. And it will sadly be no great loss to the world. That's Radiohead's Tom York earlier this year.
And now that's
and those are the people that let their music out there for free, right?
Yeah,
their last album was Pay What You Will.
And I'll end with one more from Prince, who recently we talked about this. The internet, now he had a different take, but he was still just frustrated. The internet's completely over. I don't see why I should give my music to iTunes or anyone else. They won't pay me an advance for it, and then they get angry when they can't get it. So the whole point that this is the scary thing is not so much that this is an inevitability that the music industry will end, as well as all entertainment industry, but that people won't care when it's gone. Mm. That's the scariest thing, and that's what a lot of these quotes are about, is that, and this is another, in addition to what John Mellencamp was saying, after a few generations, it's gone. Rock and roll, as important as we think it is, and as big as it was, and as much money as people made on it, and as proud as I am to say that I was a part of it, at the end of the day, they're going to say, yeah, there was this band called the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and this guy named Bob Dylan. And the rest of us, we're just going to be footnotes. And I think that that's okay. I'm happy to have spent my life doing what I wanted to do, playing music, make something out of my life, but forgetting about the idea of legacy, which is sad. You want these things to live on,
yeah,
and they won't if these things die off. That was my point, is that, well, my first point is that I'm right, and I'm always right. But my other
point, predicting the death of the entertainment industry, as you often do.
And now the other thing that I want to say is that more and more people are coming out. Now, you might say they're old people saying this and stuff, but a lot of these people are also, they've been, you know, part of the industry,
yeah,
and the entertainment and any kind of industry that has to do with art and how people...
Music, yeah, entertainment.
And so some of these people might sound a little crazy and whatnot, the way I do and stuff, but all in all, we're seeing that people are just fearing the death of art based on, you know, the digital downloads and the, just the digital culture. All right, so when we come back...
Anyway.
When we come back from the break...
Something sunnier than the death of the entertainment industry when we return.
This was when movements mattered, was the punk rock movement, and when artists, only one artist could change the world. That doesn't happen anymore, but... Gary Panter was definitely one of these people, and even if you don't know his work, although you should look it up, and we'll probably do it, we'll show the video this week too.
Cool.
That you should, he definitely...
I had honestly never heard of him,
yeah,
and I, you know...
But he definitely inspired so many artists, and if you don't know him, you definitely know Cherry and all the Pee-wee's Playhouse
the
characters.
The Pee-wee's Playhouse
which
set.
He created.
Yes.
So after the break, interview that Tony did at Mocha with Gary Panter.
All right, we'll be right back. Hey, this is Tony Wolf for The Action Room, and I'm here at Mocha, the Museum of Cartoon and Comic Art, with legendary punk rock artist Gary Panter. Gary, thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome.
And we just heard you speak at this panel discussion. We were curious, people know your work from underground publications like Raw and your cartoon character Jimbo. What was it like getting started in that punk rock sort of world? Who are your early influences, and who do you continue to be influenced by?
I got interested in art when I was a little kid. My dad is a cowboy and Indian painter. So hung out at the library and really just was into every kind of art. So the hippie comics... Zap Comics was definitely an influence. That's probably why I started drawing comics.
So you illustrated the Red Hot Chili Peppers' first self-titled album, and that did that lead to other work for you? Or what? Tell us about your work in the rock and roll world.
I got to L.A. with zero money in 76, and so I really needed money, and so I took my book around to every place I could think of, people that did movie posters, record companies, magazines that there were, and actually by the time I did the Chili, I did two color covers for the Chili Peppers. I did the first one and the third one, and so by then I'd done a lot of album covers. The first ones I did that were probably noticed were Frank Zappa covers. I did three Frank Zappa covers, and but that was really, I mean, I was going and showing my book and trying to get commercial artwork, and so really I had to, like, that was a on purpose. I needed money.
The way of the artist.
Yeah, definitely. You have to live.
You were very active in getting into the art world and the music world in the 70s and 80s. The punk rock scene was starting to arise. Can you talk about your experience in that world as it began?
I just saw a punk rock newspaper on a newsstand in 77. It was Slash Magazine in L.A. And I thought maybe my work could fit in there. And so I went and saw the guys that were the editors, and they liked my work, and they gave me a page. And that's really how I started working in punk rock stuff at all. And I was always interested in weird music, so I liked that scene. And it was really fun. I mean, it was at the beginning in Hollywood. It was just a couple of hundred art students. And it was had a lot of sense of humor to it. I mean, outside it looked scary and weird, and maybe there was some weirdness and scariness, but mostly I just saw a lot of humor, and I met a lot of people, knew the screamers, the weirdos, the zeros, the X. It was a small scene, and so you went out, if you went out, you could go out every night for some years, and some nights the venues were gone, and then they came back. And then the Huntington Beach punks joined, and then suddenly there were thousands of other punks that were athletes and so on, and the scene changed, but it was always super high-energy, fun thing.
Some of your work has a kind of a 3D feel to it, or a sort of, you know, a multi-tier structure. What do you think of the recent 3D wave now that seems to be sweeping Hollywood in films, and maybe a little bit too much 3D?
I liked Avatar. I thought it was fun. I thought it was a neat movie, but it didn't make me want to run out and watch 3D movies. It was really neat that it was 3D, but I don't really want to put on glasses. Do you have to put on glasses to watch your 3D TV?
Pretty much always, at this point.
Yeah, that's not... I don't watch TV anyway, unless I'm in a hotel room, and I'm not going to probably wear glasses in a hotel room.
So you have 3 Emmys for your design work and set work on Pee-wee's Playhouse. How did you first start working with Pee-wee Herman, and what was that like? And will you be part of this Pee-wee Herman revival that seems to be happening now? There's a Broadway show. There's another movie plan. Just talk about your work with Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee-wee Herman.
Paul approached me to do a poster for the first stage show he wanted to do, whenever that was. I don't know what year it was. And I didn't know who he was. I went and saw his act, and I liked it. And actually, I'd been in a performance art group in Dallas, Texas, after college. And we were doing puppets and stuff that was kind of like Pee-wee. So I said I'd like to design the sets and everything. And he said, okay. And so I worked on various projects. I designed the television show with a lot of friends. And wrote a movie with Paul that never got made. And you never know. If I work with them again, they don't really need me for the stage show. They can watch the TV show, so they don't...
Just replicate the set. What was the movie you wrote with him?
It was called Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but that was also the title of the second movie he wrote with Phil Hartman that did get made. And I don't know. He's been trying to sell that movie for years. I don't know if it ever has any chance of being made. I don't know. But now he's working with Judd Apatow, and that seems like that should work.
We heard he was recently contesting his public masturbation conviction or something because he's he's a lefty, but they accused him of using his right hand. It was some crazy thing. I don't know. I was wondering why he's coming forward with this now, 20 years later.
I don't know. I think that he was really humiliated when it first happened and surprised, and also he was really exhausted because he had been doing Pee-wee on a real grueling schedule for 10 years, and also because at that point, as I've mentioned before in other places, he was starting to do, like, make-a-wish things. You know, every dying kid in the world wanted to meet him, and it was really psychically exhausting. I think he didn't really have the wherewithal to fight or defend himself the first time when he had this happen to him, which was stupid anyway. I mean, porno theaters exist for a reason, and it's to watch porno. And if you go in,
there's going to be something else involved with watching porno.
And it could happen, and if you go in a porno theater, you might see porn. And so I don't think that was a giant shock. So, but this is America, where we have all the freedom in the world, you know, to conform. So.
And the Puritan sensibilities that go with it.
Exactly. So anyway, I wish Paul well. I think he's a genius at what he does.
You're working on some new Jimbo strips, stories that you will collect.
Yeah, I like drawing comics. I like making art and doing all kinds of things, and that's one of the things I do. So. Yeah, I found a good way for me to proceed on the next project is not try to just draw like an 80-page comic, but to draw chapters, and that way I can like wrap my mind around it a little easier.
And are you painting as well these days?
Yeah, I'm always painting. I'm painting like 4x8 paintings. That's a typical size for some reason. I mean, wide paintings. And I'm painting every day.
Anything else you want to plug or promote for our viewers and listeners?
I'm at GaryPanter.com, and I'm in a band called Devin, Gary, and Ross, and they're here tonight, and that's really a joy to be in a psychedelic rock band. It's great.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Gary.
Thank you.
Someone's gonna die tonight. Oi, oi, oi.
Oh, sorry. I can't get out of that punk rock mindset.
I love that song.
Oh,
someone's gonna die tonight. I think there's also a song for the Nerd News.
Oh, and it's rock version?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Nerd News! Nerd News! Nerd News! Oi, oi. All right, anyway. Everything is oi, oi, oi.
I feel like we should just keep that and continue on, but I guess we gotta play the intro.
All right.
Okay, go
ahead. Let's play the real Nerd News.
Nerd News.
Yeah, I like the punk one today.
You can write in if you prefer the punk rock nerd news. We'll put some music behind it and we'll use it in future shows.
But one thing that I just thought about was funny about Gary Panter is that he, just like a true artist is, he didn't socialize much, it doesn't seem, and he just liked to stay at home and draw. And this whole punk movement was happening around him, and he just was at home wanting to draw.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
funny. Okay, so the big news obviously was this last weekend was the box office numbers. Now I don't know that we had a clear. We kind of assumed Expendables would do it.
Right.
But
this
we
is the battle
like,
between the Expendables and Scott Pilgrim opening on the same weekend.
And Eat, Pray, Love.
And Eat, Pray, Love. That's sort of a parenthetical.
Now,
at all geeky.
Not at all.
But big in the movie world.
Now, I had heard this amazing Stallone interview on Howard Stern the other two mornings ago. And he talked a lot about how hard it is to make a movie nowadays.
Even for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of considered still an outcast in kind of an indie way, but even though... Because also, he's
right.
in his 60s.
Yeah.
See, now, this is the thing. It's a very bittersweet victory for the Expendables to win, in my mind, because...
To win that weekend.
Yeah.
The box office.
The box office. Because, okay, basically, the Expendables got $35 million. Scott Pilgrim did a measly $10.5 million. And Eat, Pray, Love did $23.7 million. Now, I think, personally, Scott Pilgrim only didn't make more because... Audiences aren't, they don't know this type of film.
They don't know, they didn't know much about it. Apparently some women were turned off because it was all about fighting and video games, and they were like, meh.
But know. Also this kind of humor and this culture, video game culture, and irreverent kind of humor and stuff.
Yeah. Outside of the geek world.
When Kick-Ass and Scott Pilgrim have their day on DVD, and they make more sales and stuff, next year and the year after that, when movies like this come out, I guarantee they'll do better. Because
right.
people will have a reference point and be like, oh, that looks like Scott Pilgrim. Okay.
And Kick-Ass has already started to do terrifically well on DVD because it just came out about 2 weeks ago.
I'm assuming the producers of Scott Pilgrim knew that they mainly were going to get their money from DVD.
Yeah.
But anyway, the
yeah.
Expendables, it's bittersweet for me to see it victorious. Because first of all, this is Rocky. I mean, this is Stallone, basically a real-life Rocky. He's in his 60s, coming back into the movie industry in 2010, way after his heyday had happened, and basically saying...
Well, he did make that Rocky Balboa, which was successful, but
yeah,
that was about 6 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole idea of having this, like, total, the way he kind of terms it, like knuckle draggers, kind of just like
right.
really like...
They resisted making the Expendables.
Yeah, like no studio wanted to make it. But the whole idea is it's just this very 80s kind of like nothing modern about it and just like grunty big men shooting things. And it's and the fact that it dominated. So the whole thing is like I'm happy that the 80s won because I love the 80s. That's the generation I came from. But I'm sad because, of course, Scott Pilgrim is a better film, you know?
Well, The Expendables, as we reviewed last episode, is just not that great a movie. It's
yeah.
fun and it's 80s-ness, but it's pretty badly written, it's pretty badly directed, it's
but
only a few decent actors in the mix.
And it sounds like there's definitely going to be a sequel, of course.
Right.
And hopefully Claude Van Damme, who
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, who supposedly was, he didn't want to do the movie originally, is now supposedly regretting it, and he probably will be
Where'd
in
you
the
hear
sequel.
That?
Stallone said he talked to him, and he's like, you regret not being in the film, huh? And he's like, yeah. And then he goes, well, if you're lucky, maybe I'll have Jet Li kick your ass in the next one, or something like that, you know. But
wow, Jet Li, the worst actor in the whole film. But
and again,
I
that's
think,
saying a lot.
I think if you call Jean-Claude Van Damme just Claude...
Yeah.
He kills you.
Oh, no.
That's what he goes by?
In fact, that is what he goes by.
Really? It sounds so nerdy.
Stallone calls him Claude. Yes.
Claude.
Yeah.
Hey, Claude.
And in fact, Howard even mentioned, like, how would you know that? How would you know to say it? Call him that? Wouldn't you want to call him Jean-Claude? And supposedly there's a story of Jean-Claude coming to Stallone's door when he first came to America or whatever when he was 21.
Wow.
Saying, like, I want to be in films. I want to, you know, and he sent the kid back on a bus. Like, he didn't even deal with him. Stallone.
And that's when he just called himself Claude.
Yeah, I
that's
guess.
So
yeah.
weird.
I think,
Claude.
I think Stallone can basically do whatever he wants.
He can call you Little Miss Mary yeah. Muffin Bonnet.
But anyway, let's...
I just have to
go
say,
ahead.
By the way, Producer Mike and I were talking about this. It is... I mean, I know this is the conventional Hollywood wisdom. The fact that a movie lives and dies on its opening weekend when word of mouth is barely even a factor.
Yeah.
The Expendables is not a great movie. Scott Pilgrim is a far superior movie. You can debate its sort of longevity or whether or not it reads to non-geeks. But, you know, The Expendables just beat all these other movies... Because people thought the concept was cool and they would go see it. Word of mouth, The Expendables is going to take a dive, I think.
I think, but sadly, Tony, I don't think people care that it's bad. I think people, it's just like with Transformers. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, the sad truth is people just like explosions. We've always joked about that, but it's kind of true.
Yeah.
It's like, because we were the only people laughing in the theater. Everybody else thought it was serious and fine. Yeah. And you know, it's like people, it doesn't, that kind of irreverent humor doesn't follow through in the rest of America or even rest of New York.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really weird.
It's just so amazing to me that, like, you can get a sequel based on your opening weekend when, you know, all you have is people going to see it on the concept.
Well, the other thing that that's the other thing, yeah.
Not making any judgment.
Right. Well, if people, they want to know what they're getting into when they pay this much money to see a film. And the Expendables, there's no doubt I know what this is when I come into this, you know. But the interesting thing about Rocky, he was talking about past films and his experience back in the day, was that something like Rocky 2, I think it was, made $6 million at the box office, right?
And that was a lot.
But it will, not only was it a lot, but it had time. Like, it was in theater for 6 months.
Yeah.
This nowadays you're
lucky if you
it.
Get 3 months.
His whole thing was that Scott Pilgrim was tracking better, and then even on Friday night, because you know the numbers pretty much before the weekend even ends.
Really?
For the thing.
They can predict that?
Yeah, Friday night, Eat, Pray, Love was doing better, and then on Saturday he gets the call that they beat Eat, Pray, Love. And this was a victory for men over a women's film, like men over women, men over like this kind of new anti-hero, wimpy, you know, kind of hipstery
Scott Pilgrim
thing. And this is another interesting point that I wanted to make that Stallone made was
the fact that
Tim Burton, he feels, kind of killed off the action star in terms of the big,
action hero.
The big, bulky, muscly guy. And he did this during Batman, and I always thought I hated the muscle suit, but he really made a good point.
Stallone said this during his Stern interview.
Yeah. Was that he said that putting Michael Keaton in a muscle suit basically opened up the door for great actors to play superheroes, but
they don't have the physique.
Yeah, they don't have the physique, which is obviously what we grew up on in the 80s of Arnold Schwarzenegger. They weren't great actors, but they were these muscle-bound, you know, kind of real dominant figures and stuff.
And they had that presence.
And so now you could put anybody in a muscle suit, and then even in current day, you don't even need the muscle suit anymore. So like Tobey Maguire, though, you know, people like that, Michael Cera, they can be action stars. And what I am hoping, although I hope they're better films, but I would like to see an action star come back again. Because Jason Statham, I think, is great.
He's terrific.
But he's not necessarily the big hulking kind of Chuck Norris-y kind of action star I kind of grew up to love. You know, even kind of a John Wayne, you know. We want somebody that's a little, even Tom Selleck or any of these people, you know, they're very dominant.
Physically larger
figures.
Than life.
Yeah. And hopefully that comes back. But again, hopefully the films are better. So it would be kind of cool that along with the superhero movies, the superhero movies used to be so shitty, and now they're respected and done well.
So maybe the action movie genre.
Yeah, really smart action films. That would be cool,
back.
Yeah.
Well, the A-Team, which I rented a while ago, was really, really fun. It was fun, smart action movie.
But I would just love
the new A-Team movie.
I would just love to see another kind of like action hero, like one guy, you know. And as unrealistic as that is, I love those movies.
Well, you're not a big TV watcher, but Jack Bauer, the 24 character, they're about to make a 24 movie in about a year.
But again,
and maybe the timing will be right so that he'll hit it just there.
Well, but I still put that in that same
category. Well,
he's not a hulking man.
Yeah.
I want a hulking guy. Wow, I sound so gay. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, wow, you're like, he's not, Jason Statham is not big enough. He's not big enough for me.
And drooling.
Now, by the way, producer Mike floated on one of our previous shows the idea that what if you did a female Expendables concept picture?
Which could
be... that's your pitch.
That could be the Sucker Punch, the new film by Zack Snyder.
What would be nice is also a resurgence of the female action hero.
Which
like
is kind
your
of,
Linda Hamilton.
Well, Angelina Jolie, Salt, just came out. And that's kind
that
of
didn't
it.
Even, yeah.
Well, it didn't do well, but that
she's
is,
no Sigourney Weaver.
No, she's not.
As far as being a true female action hero.
Yeah, I would like to definitely see some... I mean, that'd be pretty kick-ass.
And that's why we were saying Rich...
Oh, you know who was really good? Kill Bill. Uma Thurman. Was great.
Not hulking, but
not
totally
hulking.
Kick-ass.
But I don't know if I want a hulking woman.
You just want a hulking everything.
Yeah.
Rich Johnston on BleedingCool.com was saying that no one has optioned Frank Miller's graphic novel that he wrote and Dave Gibbons illustrated, Give Me Liberty, starring an African-American female action hero named Martha Washington, who kicks all kinds of ass. She's, you know, maybe if they eventually make a Give Me Liberty film, that could be the resurgence of a female action hero.
Jada Pinkett?
Jada Pinkett Smith.
She
could there
be
you
good.
Go.
All right.
Bring her on.
Now, the other thing that we just wanted to end the show on was that we had talked about the deleted scene that the Blu-ray Star Wars, the Return of the Jedi Star Wars edition, whatever you call it.
Okay, so George Lucas announced that there would be a Blu-ray edition of the Star Wars trilogy, and that they would have some deleted scenes, never-before-seen footage. This is going to hit next year, probably next summer, I think, or the fall.
And we played it last episode, and it was, you know, it's a scene where Luke puts the, right before he goes to Jabba's hut, he telepathically, you know, he's lured by Darth Vader to join the dark side,
right.
And he's tinkering with his
lightsaber. He's building
his
own lightsaber, which is a big Jedi thing.
And then he puts it in R2-D2. And that was supposed to be his original intro in Return of the Jedi. Now, here's
the thing.
It was
supposed to make you think, has he turned dark?
Right.
Has he turned, you know, he's wearing the black outfit.
Blaster.com, Blastr.com. We're going to play a clip. Basically, they had talked to Mark Hamill last year.
2009.
About this same clip.
Right.
And he said he never did a clip like this.
He never shot a scene. He said, I would remember if I shot a scene like that.
So let's play the clip, and we'll talk about it.
I'm here with Mark Hamill, and I was discussing the shooting of Return of the Jedi with him, and I asked him about the lightsaber that has been offered into the marketplace with the story that there was a scene shot in the cave of you constructing your lightsaber that didn't make the final cut of the film, and you offered to talk about that.
Well, I'm just going to say, I never shot a scene like that. Now, mind you, there are scenes in the movies where they do an insert, like when they were making my hand.
Right, right.
That was done post-production where it's not my hand.
Exactly.
But so I would remember if I'd done something like that, and I did. So.
Okay.
Maybe rumors get out of hand.
Exactly.
That's what happened.
All right, well, I appreciate you taking the time to address that question.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
All right.
So here's my deal. I have my conspiracy theory.
So it's a stand-in. It's no big deal.
Okay, so you think it's a stand-in. My take on it, because here's the deal. If it is a stand-in, because they do show his face.
You see only the slightest glimpse of his
face. You only see the slightest glimpse. And I'm not one of these people that will take the time to match the stand-in's face with Luke's face, with Mark Hamill's face. But I guarantee somebody online will match. And if it matches, and it is Mark Hamill's face, and it's not a stand-in.
And Mark Hamill claims he never did it.
And then it's a conspiracy, and George Lucas lied to us, which I really don't think he's above doing. And he basically could have made this deleted scene right now. And
like
just
you
say,
think he filmed it recently.
Yeah, and just says it's from back then. So, I don't know. It's small enough where it could have been done now. You know
I don't think Lucas is crazy in so many ways, and he's lost his way in so many ways. But I don't think he's devious enough in a truly evil way to record something 8 months ago and then claim it's a lost deleted scene from 1983. I just don't think, what's the motivation there?
Money, Tony.
Yeah, I know, but I just don't think he's that much of a dick. He's a dick in a lot of ways.
What has his motivation been for the last
17
years of Star Wars? I don't know. Man.
I just don't think when he recorded new elements for the Star Wars Special Edition movies, he said, I'm recording new things.
How about this? What if it's this? He did include the scene in Star Wars. Because here's the other thing that's interesting.
Star Wars.
I mean, for Jedi. But I'm just saying, here's the other thing that's interesting that they talked about the deleted. But hold on. This is an interesting point about the deleted scene.
Right.
Was that the effects were done, and they still didn't include it. A lot of times when you have deleted scenes, the effects haven't been done, all that stuff. So here, just
they claimed the effects were done on the scene, and the scene was not included.
So just listen to me here about this, Tony.
Right.
If he did this scene back then, or rather, if the scene was in the script, but they never did it, okay, and they just did it now, he never has to say that it was done back then. He just says this was a deleted scene. So they could have done it now, and it's still a deleted scene that was never shot.
But they claimed the effects were done back then.
Did they claim that?
They said the effects were done, and it was never included in the movie.
But
that's what you just said. They said.
Well, no. Well, that's somebody who talked about it.
Okay.
If they assume it's a real
scene. Who said that? Me said that. You said.
No. But I'm just saying, if out of the words of George Lucas, he never actually says this is from back then. He just says this is a deleted scene. Then technically, it could have been done now. I think the
Illuminati run the world, and the Illuminati put that shit there. This is a conspiracy theory. We're spending 10 minutes of the show on this.
And George Lucas is a robot.
Yes.
Can you please do his impression?
Well, he's been replaced by a robot, but he sometimes
hangs out with Miss Piggy.
This is George Lucas talking about the fact that he did lie to the fans, and he did do the scene just last week.
I told you guys it was a deleted scene, but the truth is I filmed it at Skywalker Ranch 6 months ago. Suck on that, fanboys. You're still all going to buy the Blu-ray for $45 when it comes out, even though it won't have much you've never already seen, and even though I may have filmed that 4 months ago.
This is him on Larry King.
Yes, Larry.
Can you do Larry King?
George Lucas is here with us.
That's pretty good.
And George, you say that, I don't know what the kids talk about. It's a Blu-ray? What's a Blu-ray, George?
And you have to have a caller.
We have Fred online from...
But he always has to say the city.
Yeah.
That's what I...
Fred from Atlanta. Go, Fred.
All right. I'm a real big nerd. George Lucas.
Yes, you are.
George, what are you...
You've made me a very rich man.
George, what are you hiding in your neck?
I actually have another deleted scene from Jedi in my jowls, which you will see when you shell out money for the Blu-ray of the Star Wars trilogy.
I just want to see his neck, like, ribbit like a frog.
Yeah, yeah. There's like an alien pops out
of
the neck.
Which is funny because we're doing Kermit the Frog as an impression of him. He really looked like a frog.
Hi-ho, George Lucas here.
Ribbit Budweiser, right. Star Wars trilogy. Okay, let's
okay.
End the show.
I believe that brings us to the end of the nerd news and to the end of our show.
Okay, so end it, Tony.
Thank you, as always, for joining us.
End it like a punk rocker.
Everybody fans out there, you gotta follow the Action Room, because they're doing real punk rock. They're in a fucking room. Can you believe that shit? They're bringing you geek radio in a fucking room. Follow us on Facebook. Join our Twitter. Oi, oi, oi.
It sounds like the Energizer guy.
That's it.
What did he say?
Talk about a reference.
Rocco, Jocko.
Yeah.
Gonna surprise you. The Action Room is going to surprise you!
Alright, so let's end it. And join the Action Army, as always.
Join the Action Army. Be a true patriot of geekdom. And we'll be back in just 3.5 days.